Congratulations. Bad news, everybody. Maysoon and I were sick this week. We're getting better. Don't get too worried about it, but we couldn't really fully record an episode at the top of our game. So next week, we're going to be back with our responses to Conrad stuff, our conversation about faking it, tips and tricks on faking it, one of the key skills of the art world. Oh, wait, I'll give you a trivia question this week to make up for how bad we're in the doghouse with everybody. Okay, guys, I'm going to describe a photograph to you, and then I'm going to need the name of the photographer, okay? On the left, a soberly dressed man and woman engage in a tense face-off. On the right, two bearded men in jeans and t-shirts enjoy a deep kiss. Behind the straight couple, the title of a book on display in a shop window declares, "World of Our Fathers." Although the photograph was later revealed to be staged, its status as a sign of the changing times was already assured. And this photograph is from 1977. I'm not going to tell you the title of the photograph. We're looking for the name of the artist. And I am reading the description from Art and Queer Culture, which was edited by Catherine Lord and Richard Meyer. So we're looking for the photographer. And of course, winner gets us doing your voicemail thing, unless you request something else. Winner gets to request whatever they want from us. Okay, so send in your answer. And this week, we're going to go dig deep into the archives for an interview we did a long time ago, and congratulations, Pine Tree Past, with Jaime Cortez, because it's one of my favorite interviews we ever did. And maybe this will get you excited to dig into the archive. We've done a lot of these shows, guys. Okay, so have a listen, and we'll be back on track next week.
We're here in downtown Oakland today, working our way through every Oakland-based artist, but today we have the great pleasure of speaking to Jaime Cortez. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. Thanks for coming out.
This is one of the first times we've ever been in somebody's studio.
Good idea.
I don't know why. It seems like a natural place to meet an artist.
Yes, I would agree. And it's fun, too, to see what people's workspaces look like.
The first thing that struck me in your studio is there are quite a few naked penises.
Yes, there are penises, and they are naked. I am currently working on an exhibition it's going to be called Self-Evident. I really feel like we are in a golden age of self-portraiture. That does not mean that this is the era when the finest of self-portraits are being made, but it is an era with an unprecedented oceanic volume of people taking their own portraits, their own pictures. We call them selfies, and I do think of selfies as being different from self-portraits in a couple of different ways. But I am interested in that reality that we're in right now, with such an incredible volume of people turning the camera on themselves. And I'm focusing in particular on gay men and how they present themselves in the pro bono sexual marketplace that is Craigslist. And so those personal ads are interesting to me. I'm interested in how that particular platform generates a particular visual culture with its own kind of repeating tropes and themes and ways of presenting the self. So that's kind of the center of the exhibition, but there will be other components to it that also kind of play with the idea of how we represent ourselves. But most of my time and energy is going into these drawings, and I can bring them out and show them to you if you want to see what I'm talking about.
Yeah. That's a very tender touch.
I think that is a word that I think about a lot as well, is just detailed, tender depiction. Part of it is that I know that when people are photographing themselves for sex ads, even though their identity is generally not discernible because they have somehow either cropped or obscured their faces, it's still an incredibly vulnerable moment, and it's very easy to mock someone when they're trying to like present themselves in a very sexualized way, and they're making it clear that they have unfulfilled needs. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really easy to kind of be laughing at them. And some of them are actually really funny, but in the main, I feel really moved by these images as I work on them. They're very time consuming, so I get to, you know, sit with these images for, you know, 30, 40 hours.
These are colored pencil?
These are colored pencil on paper, yes. 22 by 30?
22 by 30.
22 by 30 is the size of the paper.
There's a lot of levels of undress. Well, mainly two levels.
Partially dressed.
Partially dressed and fully nude.
You know, I'm interested in seeing a range of bodies and races and ages represented. And so my suite of drawings will be kind of selected with that in mind, that there's this tremendous range of desires that I'm interested in showing in the exhibition.
And you find that there is a fairly diverse group of people posting themselves online? Like you were just saying, you're wanting to find a wide range of bodies. And
I think that a platform like Craigslist, or really any of the gay men's, get sex sites, mm-hmm. It selects for, I think, people who feel the most confidence in their bodies and in presenting themselves. So I think it tends to skew towards the conventionally kind of acceptable body. Younger, leaner, more muscular is really what it skews towards. That is who feels empowered, I think, most to express, to photograph themselves and post it. So I think it does skew that way.
If you're comfortable saying, have you talked or anything, like contacted any of these people?
No, I have not contacted any of the people whose pictures I am using. That's another thing to me that's kind of intriguing with this whole series is, it's like this weird way I am doing their self-portrait. Mm-hmm. I treat the online images as a commons. And I do take pictures from there. They're not copyrighted by anywhere I could see. So I have been using them.
I think even if they were, wouldn't it still be fair use if you're like putting it through another iteration?
I would think so. I think the thing that maybe complicates fair use somewhat is how much alteration does and doesn't happen. I am meticulously faithful to the original photograph in doing my drawings. And so the amount of alteration, I change it completely by turning it into this very kind of minutely rendered colored pencil drawing, photorealistic. But I have not really intervened into content or composition and all that other stuff. So it's kind of an interesting question. I still assume that I am under fair use.
I think you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be okay. But are you using San Francisco Bay Area Craigslist?
Many of them are. I've lost track of where some of them come from because I have a trove of like now 400 images that I've culled over the months, the past half year. And most of them are from the Bay Area. Yeah.
What's your process of selection, I guess, of these 400?
Well, it's interesting. It's evolved over time. Initially, I thought I was most interested in finding a kind of a taxonomy of how these men are presenting themselves in these sex ads. And by that, I mean somewhere everybody got the memo about this is how you present yourself. And there's very conventional things that start happening in terms of how people are photographing themselves. And so that was interesting to me. But over time, I grew less interested in the taxonomy and more interested in the kind of story behind them. And so I think the drawings fall into those categories. Some of them are very taxonomic. Like I'm interested in like this drawing, for instance. That was the first one I completed. I really was struck by that drawing because there's something very interesting happening, and I'll describe it. It's a young, kind of athletic, muscular man, and he is taking a photograph of himself in the mirror, and he has an iPad held up in front of his face, and he's using the flash to take the picture in the mirror. The flash lights up the body and reveals the body in detail for your visual consumption. But that same flash is what conceals his face, his identity. Mm-hmm. And so that tension of the revealing and concealing is a big theme of the of what I'm doing, is how these images, you know, will do that. And that, to me, is a trope. You know, it's part of the visual taxonomy. And then other ones are kind of interesting to me for a couple of other, for different kinds of reasons. There's an image of, you know, this very heavyset, fat young man in a little tiny, you know, pleated schoolgirl skirt with pantyhose. I guess those are panties, stockings, garters and stockings. Is that what they're called?
I think that's all right.
Okay. Stockings and garters and a little crop top. And I really enjoyed, like, the kind of ownership that this person takes of their own sexual desires. You know, he's putting himself into a marketplace that values, above all else, I think, like, the expression of masculinity.
For sure.
To look manly, right? And then, of course, it values a certain types of bodies, and it's not his body. That, for the most part, is what is valued and affirmed. And so I think that there's like a power of just taking ownership of taking this body, this fat body with fat, and dressing it up in women's clothes and posing in this way that is very bottomish, like indicating that you're going to be a receptive partner, ready to be penetrated, right? And so he's choosing like these many different layers of what is seen as less than. And so femaleish is seen as less than maleish. Fat is seen as less than thin. You know, and so you have all of these layers that of power, I think, that this person is taking into their hands. And so I like the story. I haven't seen many images like this one of this man dressed up this way. It's not part of the taxonomy that I've seen for the most part, but it really stuck out at me for its kind of for not being part of the taxonomy. So it's a mix of things, and over time, as you sift through the images, and it becomes this big database of images, my objectives have shifted, and I've been guided by the photos, and some of them I'm really excited about because they're full of story. And some of them I like because they're just form and figuration, and some of them are even kind of abstract. There's this one image here of this man who's into Lycra and tights, and so the image is from, he's wearing this, you know, full leg covering and crotch covering Lycra tights, and he shoots himself from underneath, and the image becomes almost abstracted. Yeah. If it wasn't part of this series, it would take a moment for it to register what exactly you're looking at, because it's shot from an unfamiliar position down underneath his legs, and he's wearing these shiny tights, and they're all lit up and golden. And so some of them are interesting to me just formally as images. So
a lot of your, it seems like a lot of the images you chose, sort of the background or the location is really not important or play, you know, sort of neutral, very neutral. And I'm wondering if that's something you've taken out of it, or if that's sort of, how is that part of the trope or part of the,
it's interesting. The first four drawings that I have, three of them are in a really generic kind of interior space. One is just a man, a hardwood floor, a wall. Another is just, you know, a man, a bed, a wall. There's no drawings or photos on the walls. There's no electric outlets on, right, to be seen. It's really that naked, almost landscape-y, the space. Yeah. The third one that I described earlier with the flash, it is a man, his iPad, and a bed. Now, the fourth one I've done shows an interior of a bathroom, which is where a lot of these photographs happen. A lot of them happen in the bathroom or in the bedroom. And so I do want to bring the bathroom into this photo series because it's an important site for the production of these images. That's where there's a mirror. That's where people feel like they want to take their pictures. And so, yeah, I don't even know how conscious I was of how barren some of the spaces were. But I think I was at some level thinking that in some ways the barrenness is reflective of kind of a loneliness in the images, kind of a loneliness. They're solitary people.
Solitary.
So yeah, you're describing one where this man is just standing, and he's kind of bent over and you're seeing him from the side and his hands are in fists and just touching the floor and he's just kind of bent over and it's a really interesting image to me. It's kind of enigmatic in some ways. But yeah, there's a lot of this kind of loneliness that permeates it for me, and I am aware that I might just be reading into that. Like, for some people, that's just where they were, and they were actually feeling very empowered about getting what they wanted sexually. And so I recognize that. But of course, that whole visual genre of images of men in sex ads is a very solitary one. It's almost always one person. Soon I'll be moving into the images that are more about kind of story and sight. Mm-hmm. There's going to be drawings, and then there's photos that I'm taking, and then a sculptural piece and a little installation. So it's going to be multi-part installation. I've been working on a sculpture that's kind of been really an interesting challenge for me. The sculpture is going to be, it's a kind of a avatar of me. And it's kind of a peeping Tom kind of sculpture. It's going to be kind of looking over the whole scene and taking it all in, much as I, as the artist, was kind of peeping at all of these ads. And so I'm kind of owning my own kind of voyeurism and consumption of images. And so I've been working on this statue, and it's been a good challenge for me. I'm not trained as a sculptor.
The hands are very dainty.
Well, yes, I was very much inspired by Kewpie dolls. I don't know if you guys remember Kewpie dolls, those little dolls that kind of sit there with their hands up. And for reasons I'm not entirely sure of, I think it was just for humorous effect.
Can you remind listeners one more time when and where the show is?
Complicated question. It will be at the California Institute of Integral Studies. The name of the exhibition is Self-Evident. It will be paired with an exhibition with Trong Tran. So Trong Tran and I, Jaime Cortez, will be showing together. We were originally going to open in very early February, but because the space is actually a brand new space that they're building, it's a new gallery, new student space, they've had a bit of a delay, and now it's looking like February 19th will be the opening at the California Institute of Integral Studies. They're on 10th and Mission in San Francisco.
I remember I first saw you talk about your work at the Visual Activism Symposium last spring, where you talked about Sexile.
Yes. Yeah, I had talked about the graphic novel Sexile, which I produced for AIDS Project Los Angeles and the Institute for Gay Men's Health back in 2004. And it was a graphic novel that was biographical, and it told the story of Adela Vasquez, a person who was born biologically male and was raised during the era of the Cuban Revolution. She was born in 1959, literally at the dawn of the revolution, and was raised as a, you know, boy in revolutionary Cuba, and who came to the United States in the Mariel boat lift in the early 80s, and then transitioned to becoming a woman in the United States. And so it's this amazing saga of Adela Vasquez that I was very honored to tell.
You know, Megan Wilson, I've seen her speak a few times, and she shows a video of, like, protests that happened during the first dot-com boom. You were part of that.
Yes,
right?
Part of that, yeah, then the first time around. You know, I look back on it, and I don't think that we understood just what a steamroller it was going to be. And when it came back the second time, we are now in, you know, in the kind of dot-com gentrification version 2.0. I think it's bigger than ever. I don't think we had imagined what a steamroller it was. And I don't think we had imagined how much, in particular, the city of San Francisco was going to change, and how that critical mass of artists and weirdos and of course not just artists and weirdos, it's just, you know, people who were kind of economically fragile, or even people who were economically solid, now find themselves unable to stay. And so the first time around it felt so huge, but I don't think it compares to what has happened now. And I think that the first time around was really hard, but I think this time around, I think the city has really changed now. I think it's a different place. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it'll offer up new kinds of opportunities for creative people, new kinds of ways of functioning. But for those who were kind of on the edge and who were marginal, I think it's that much harder. It's that much harder. The marginalization has gotten deeper, I think. I don't want to be fatalistic about it because I know how resourceful artists are. And we're as good as cockroaches. Like we can survive a lot. But it's hard. It's hard.
Do you have any advice for young artists?
On the very practical tip, a few things. One is to be really mindful of the amount of debt that one accumulates for art school education and really think about how necessary it is to achieve your goals. It's not for everyone. I was really happy to come out of grad school with no debt, and that was by design. I thought either I'm going to do it that way or I'm not going to do it at all. I don't want to be out in the world with an MFA and, you know, $40,000, $50,000 of debt. That didn't make sense to me. I think also on the practical tip for young artists is the importance of having authentic connections with others in your community of artists. And it's different from networking because it's not just about, you know, shaking hands and, you know, passing out cards with your information on it. It's about having real connection. It's about supporting other people, showing up as best you can. And it's hard sometimes because you need to do your own work and you're tired sometimes, but it's important to try to get out and support. We all need it and be part of that ecosystem. And then finally is to understand that, like, as you go through your artistic life, I think that the basic questions are always the same. How are you feeling about your work? Do you feel like it's getting recognized and supported? How is your financial picture? How is your courage? And it's always those variables, but they're in different measures. You keep coming to this to the crossroads, and the crossroads is always the same one. But every time you come to it, you're going to formulate a slightly different answer. Sometimes your courage is very high, but your finances are crappy. Sometimes you're actually doing okay financially, but other pieces of your creative life are not so great. And so you have to, I think to me, being an artist is about renegotiating the same variables again and again to deal with your changing life. And you have to keep adjusting and readjusting and recalibrating your decisions. So that's it.
Thank you so much for talking to us today.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.